Now, Governor, back on May 13th, 2021, you signed a bill, it was 5476, that reformed drug laws in Washington state and reduced the penalties for possessing lethal drugs. Now, on the streets, here's how it works. If a police officer catches someone with fentanyl, which, as you know, is 50 times more potent than heroin, the officer will give the suspect a pamphlet on where to get treatment. He cannot arrest that person, cannot refer him for prosecution. And that's it. And if an officer catches that same person again, the officer hands that person another brochure. If they catch that person a third time, they can arrest that person and charge him with misdemeanor. But there's no system for tracking those referrals, so that person might just say, I haven't been caught before. So at street level, this basically has legalized hard drugs in Washington. And in the last couple of years, overdose deaths, an all-time high. In fact, more people died of drug overdose in King County than have been killed statewide in traffic accidents that you were just mentioning. Crime, violent and otherwise, is soaring. So is street homelessness, which I know you're concerned about. And it's all heavily influenced by hard drugs. How can you solve any of these problems without making hard drugs a felony again?
Well, you've pointed out that this system is not working and it needs change. As you know, the legislature responded to kind of a grenade dropped into the system by some judicial decisions. That's yes. Not to disrespect the decision of the court, but it was something that had its immediate reaction, and the legislature had acted very quickly. And I think that what they proposed in response to that court decision is not working in our state and needs substantial revision for exactly the reason you've talked about, that we are not getting enough people into chemical addiction treatment to break this addiction. And that ought to be the goal, because that's, in fact, what works. And I think there's a couple things we need to do, or more than a couple things, actually three or four things, to get people off of these very, very dangerous drugs. One of them, we got to have more treatment facilities available to people so that they can get treatment. And by the way, this treatment can be effective. Medical-assisted treatments called MAT, where you get them on this other medicine so that it breaks this addiction cycle, has been shown to be quite effective. It's not 100%. Sometimes it takes two, sometimes it takes three go-rounds,
yeah.
But it can be effective. So getting people into that treatment, getting them to break that addictive cycle, extremely important. And you're right, the fentanyl carnage we're having is just a heartbreak to so many families. Now, the problem is, again, you've accurately portrayed, some people need to have a requirement that you go into that treatment. And that's why I am against the legalization of hard drugs. We've got to have an adequate incentive for people to get into treatment. Now, whether that's a felony, I'm not sure it has to be a felony, because, frankly, we haven't been meeting out felonies in any event. There's talk in the legislature at the moment of making it a gross misdemeanor. That's probably more something that prosecutors would actually use, frankly. So I think that what you're going to see coming out of the legislature is both an increase in chemical addiction treatment to be available to people, and to maintain a criminal sanction that will make sure that people get that treatment. The current system is not working because okay. The officers don't know how many incidents the person has had, so they can't really effectively deal with it. So I am relatively confident you're going to see a much better program coming out. And actually, there's some bipartisan, I think we're going to have a bipartisan bill by the end of the day.
All right.
And we obviously need it. The fentanyl deaths are just terrific right now.
Here is what Mary Robnett, I think you know Prosecutor Robnett from Pierce County. Here's what she said. She said, by decriminalizing drug possession, the legislature has reduced the opportunities to obtain treatment and reduced the incentive to stay in treatment, We do not want to emulate Oregon's example of decriminalization, which is a debacle. Please return drug possession to a felony so suspects can be arrested and charges can be filed. Again, which gives them an incentive, Governor, to seek treatment because they'd be looking at real consequences this time.
Well, I whether it's a felony or a misdemeanor, you need a criminal sanction. A year in jail seems to me to be a significant criminal sanction to keep people in treatment. That's my sense at the moment. I totally agree we should not be decriminalizing this. My sense of a year in jail is a considerable sanction. And frankly, we don't have enough jail space right now for the people with our current laws as well. You know, we have a backlog of prosecution that's a mile long. So you may call it a felony, but people won't be doing it because they don't have room in the jails for people.
Well, there's room. Governor. There's plenty of room. Is there a willingness to prosecute is the issue, particularly in King County.
There's not enough courts to actually prosecute. Anyway, John, what I think you're going to see come out of the legislature, I suspect I will be good with it, to maintain a criminal sanction, do not decriminalize drugs, and have a way to make sure people get to treatment. Now, but let me bring up another issue with this.
All right.
If you're going to, the goal is to break this addiction cycle of people that's got the hooks into people. To do that, you need, you know, for some people, you need a criminal sanction, which I believe we are going to maintain at a level that I think will have bipartisan support by both parties. You need to have the availability to have the treatment, to actually get the treatment. And that's a challenge for folks to have the treatment facilities to get the job done. But you do need, for a lot of people, another thing is to get them into an environment where the treatment is successful. And frankly, what we have found is if you've got people living in a street corner or a homelessness encampment, that treatment is much, much, much less likely to be successful. So to get right. people under a roof in a stable environment, I remember I talked to a guy down in Vancouver at a tiny home village. He was a young man. He'd been involved in some crimes. And he told me that he finally, when he got into this tiny home, it's like this little fiberglass pod. He says, look, this is not exactly a castle, but it allowed me enough privacy and security to get my feet under me. And I'm now in medically assisted treatment and it's working for me. And it saved my life. He said, I would have died out here of some drug overdose. And it saved my life to have a roof over my head. So I think
it's a start. That's a start. I want to confide something to you. My sister had a terrible drug problem for a number of years and was homeless at times for several years. And if she had been homeless in the environment we have today, where basically drugs are legalized and in some places in Seattle normalized, culturally normalized, she would have died. She lived because she was able to break away from the environment she was in that was slowly killing her. And that's why we've got to address drugs.
Well, I would expand it a little bit. I would say we've got to address drugs, but the point I want to make is to effectively address drugs, to get people to break this cycle, having a roof over a person's head helps that happen. I just want to point out that there's multiple things we need to do to address drugs and multiple things we need to do against crime, including have more well-trained police officers, which we're going to do this year. But I think the housing aspect of this is sometimes forgotten. If you want a person to get off drugs, it's 4 or 5 or 6 times more effective if you're doing it if you get them into a situation away from the environment that you're talking about. And normally that involves a roof over your head and some structure.
But it's got to be drug-free, would you agree?
Eventually, yeah.
No, I mean the place they go to has got to be drug-free.
Ultimately, but you don't have a person drug-free on day one, okay, to get them off drugs.
No, but they can't have drugs with them. I mean, otherwise you've got another drug encampment.
If you can get people into this system, get them into treatment, to say it's going to be in the first 30 minutes, probably not realistic. But that's what works.
Okay.
So I just want to point out, I think there's multiple things we need to do, not just one thing.
Can we talk about police chases real quickly? Because also in 2021, Governor, you signed House Bill 1054, heavily restricting police chases. Within days of its passage, you were getting complaints pouring in from every corner of the state, from prosecutors, from cops, sheriffs, etc. And again, at street level, here's the impact of the bill that you made law. According to the State Patrol, between 2014 and 2020, there's an average of about 1,200 suspects a year who would not pull over when the police hit their lights. In 2022, last year, it wasn't 1,200. It was 3,100. The record for stolen cars, which, keep in mind, police cannot chase because it's classified nonviolent and they can't chase a nonviolent suspect, was about 30,000 a year. That was the record up until last year. Last year, you know how many cars were stolen? 45,000. It's a 50% increase over the previous high. So this new law has literally changed the equation between cops and criminals in favor of the criminal. The criminal on the road now has the leverage. And as you were pointing out just the other day, our roads are more dangerous than they've been in 30 years. So again, you made this law. I know there's a consensus to do something about it. A couple legislators are trying to stand in the way. What's Governor Inslee going to do about this?
I'm open to changes of this law, and it's like many things in life. You take some action, and then you adjust. And I think, in my opinion, this needs adjustment for the reasons that you've talked about. So I'm open to changes in the pursuit laws, should the legislature get them to my desk. I think there are some reasonable things that could be done in that regard. But I do want to say reductions of pursuits were done by the legislature to try to increase safety so that people aren't injured in, you know, 100-mile-an-hour chases through downtown areas. And that's not an idle thing. We had a fatality, I believe, involving a Seattle police officer, I'm told, in an emergency response the other day.
That, he hit a girl in a crosswalk. He hit a 23-year-old woman in a crosswalk. He was responding to an emergency.
What I'm saying is there are risks to the public of high-speed chases. And so I think the general thrust to try to reduce those risks and find a balance between the risk of injury during a high-speed chase and otherwise is, you know, you're trying to hit the right mark on the dial. I think it's not a perfect mark in the dial, and that's why I'm open to some changes in this regard. But chases have their risk. I lost a cousin of mine who was a police officer during a response to a bank robbery in up in Shoreline years ago. So it does have risk, and there has been some reduction, of the number of people who have been killed during these high-speed pursuits. So, yes, I think they need a lot of change, and I'm open to some of those changes.
Okay, I know we're running very low on time. I want to real quickly look at the issue of vax mandates. As you know, the CDC has now said that people who are vaccinated and people not vaccinated but have likely been exposed to COVID by now should be treated the same. The Biden administration has dropped its vax mandate for large companies. It did that last year. The Pentagon dropped its vax mandate just this past month. You've got a workforce, Governor, with a shortage of ferry workers, shortage of road crew members, government at all levels, short of healthcare workers, cops and firefighters. Shouldn't you now also, like the Pentagon, lift the vax mandate, rehire those workers who are trained and experienced and can fill in the shortages that you badly need filling in?
Well, the good news is, actually, yesterday, we are back up to our pre-COVID level of staffing for our Department of Transportation. So we have made significant progress in that regard. The state is, like all major employers, having some staffing issues from airlines to retail outlets. So staffing has been a problem. People are welcome to come back and work for us. Simply, they need to comply with our existing rules. And we do believe our Department of Health this remains a threat, and that getting a vaccination is still very, very important. And so we, in conjunction with our state employees, they have agreed this is the right position as well, to have a vaccination for not only their sake, to try to save their lives, because these vaccinations still have a very significant reduction in the risk of hospitalization and death. And that remains the case. That has not changed. This vaccination still saves lives aplenty if, in fact, get them. And it is a heartbreak to see people who have not. I remember listening to one of your competitors' radio shows to a state senator and a former state trooper who both didn't get vaccinated and died while they're in state service or shortly thereafter. And so this remains a risk. And by the way, I do encourage people to get this vaccine.
Okay.
It still remains a risk for people.
But,
so,
and then I'll give you the final word here, Governor. But as you know, it is less virulent than it was before. And most people have been exposed to COVID. I've been vaxxed twice. And like you, I've been vaxxed and I've had COVID. In fact, I've had it twice. So people have been exposed for the most part. And we do need more healthcare workers, more cops, more ferry boat workers. Why not lift the mandate and do what the CDC says, which is treat people alike?
Because we do not want people leaving state service while they get COVID and get sick and aren't coming to work. It is a health, both a health risk to them individually, and we care about our state employees. But it is also a good management practice, so you don't have people getting sick and having outages. We have had outages because people are sick getting COVID. And still, even though there's been a lot of exposure, these shots still reduce the risk. Even though you're right that there's been a lot of exposure, it still reduces the risk significantly. That's why the federal government recommends people get the vaccine still, and we're following that scientific advice.